Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I am a PGY2 resident. And this is episode 123 of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. In this episode, I will be talking about ethics as tested on the USMLE exams. So this is a podcast that will be relevant to anyone taking step 1 or taking step 2 CK or taking step 3. Okay, probably especially step 3 and step 2. CK, this stuff comes up a lot. So this will be the first part in a series on ethics. So let's just jump right into it. The first thing I will say is, in general, just as a test-taking strategy or when you're confronting ethics questions, don't get emotional. The thing is, emotions are very terrible things to have when you're taking any kind of exam, whether it's an ethics exam or a USMLE exam or a shelf exam, doesn't matter. Emotions are terrible means of taking exams. So I will strongly encourage you, if you can get rid of emotions, like, and just be like stoic while taking an exam. So if you want like a mental picture for that, think about Kawhi Leonard before, if you're a basketball fan, think about Kawhi Leonard before the Toronto Raptors won the championship. And then we saw that, oh, wait, Kawhi can actually have fun. He can laugh and all that stuff. That is how you really should look at the USMLE. So really any exam. Take an exam as a stone cold person, right? Kind of like Kawhi Leonard. And if you don't know who Kawhi Leonard is, just look him up and you'll see exactly what I mean. Okay. And then another thing I will say is, don't try to be intuitive with ethics questions, right? The thing is, ethics questions sort of go with certain patterns, like certain, like just high yield principles you want to try to follow. So I will try to highlight those high yield principles as I go along. But to be perfectly honest with you, if you try to do what is intuitive on ethics questions, you'll probably get the question right, but the thing is, you're almost giving yourself like a 60-40 shot of picking the answer that is wrong, okay? So ethics obey certain patterns, and again, I will highlight those patterns. Usually, I will try to highlight it with a clinical case as we go along. And then, the third thing I will say is, in general, on an ethics question, if all hope is lost, you're like, these answers all sound the same. I don't know which one to choose. I don't know what's going on here. Try to always pick the answer that gets the patient to speak more, okay? Anything that encourages more talk from the patient usually ends up being the right answer. So that's a very key, important principle you want to keep at the back of your mind. Okay, so what if you get a question, you know, about like a 32-year-old guy, you know, let's say he's overdosed on heroin. Right, and you're not able to obtain any, like he still has like some spontaneous respirations, you're not able to get any brainstem reflexes from him, and right now he's on a ventilator, he's hooked up to all these monitors and all these machines that are keeping him alive, and he, you know, overdosed on heroin. I mean, if you work in an ICU, you've probably encountered this scenario more times than you care to remember, right? And then, and let's assume in the question to tell you that, you know, he has been homeless for the past 7 months. And over that period, he's been dating this girl that he met, right? And let's assume that this girl that he met, you know, comes in and says, my partner said that he would never want to be a vegetable. I mean, they won't use the word vegetable on an MBA meeting. They'll use something a little more professional, but you get what I mean, right? And then let's say that his family that he has been estranged from for a long period of time comes in and says, oh, we want everything done. We want you to do this and do that and do this and do that to try to sustain his life. What would your next best step in management be under these circumstances? I would really hope that you're thinking about withdrawing care, right? And sort of letting like nature take its course, okay? So you may say, Divine, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is his family. Are we not supposed to obey their wishes, right? So here's the pattern you want to keep at the back of your mind. The thing is, if you have an accurate, recent, representation of what you think a patient's wishes are, then you should strongly consider going with that answer on an exam, regardless of source, right? Regardless of source. So, again, listen to what I just said. If you have an accurate representation of what a patient's wishes are, right? Accurate. And the thing is, this is not going to be ambiguous on an MBME exam. They will make it clear that, oh, this person is very knowledgeable. Over the last couple of months or weeks or whatever, they've been with the affected party in question. They know what his or her wishes are and all that stuff. Go with that, okay? Regardless of who is coming from. As long as you can establish in the MBME question that it's an accurate representation, an accurate recent representation of what that person's wishes are, go with the answer that agrees with that. Okay, again, I know you may have some misgivings about this, but remember this whole thing I said about not letting your emotions get in the way of selecting the right answer. At the end of the day, you can express any emotion you want when you get that high score, but up until then, you better keep your emotions in check. Again, be like Kawhi Leonard, right? Kawhi Leonard doesn't smile, doesn't speak, right? But after they won the NBA title, we saw a totally different Kawhi that could laugh, make fun with people, and all that stuff. Okay, now, what if you get a question about a patient that is septic, okay? And let's assume that this patient has, like, you know, waxing and waning levels of consciousness. This person is seeing, like, monsters in the room and all that stuff. And this patient is super septic. Their temperature is, like, 103. Blood pressure is, like, 80 over 40. And their white count is, like, 25,000. And you're trying to administer like antibiotics and fluids and do some diagnostic testing. And the patient says no. He says, I don't want to get stuck. And in fact, your friends at the MBME, they may actually like literally put this in parentheses. I don't want to get stuck. Don't give me any medication. I don't want you to put any poison in me and all that crap. And then they say, what is the next best step in management? The thing is, the answer I would hope you choose is one that involves giving the antibiotic, giving the fluids, and obtaining your diagnostic tests. So this is a very important high yield principle to keep in mind. Whenever you get an MBME ethics question and the patient is not mentally there, right? So, you know, and the thing is, I'm trying to be very specific in using like easy words that people can understand, right? If a person is not mentally there, so say for example, they're delirious, right? Or they're super sick and they're not like mentally aware of their surroundings, or the person is under the influence of some substance. Whatever comes out of their mouth or whatever decision they make in those states does not count on an MBME exam. Very high yield to know that it does not count on an MBME exam. Basically, the answer you want to pick under those circumstances is just ask yourself, if you had a population of 1,000 people standing in front of you, what rational decision will the bulk of those 1,000 people go with? Whatever decision they will go with, that should be your right answer. Okay? So, under those circumstances, just make the best rational medical decision, regardless of what the patient says. If a patient is impaired, then whatever they say does not count. Again, very high yield. This is one of those cases where you disregard the autonomy because the patient is just not mentally there, right? So you cannot necessarily follow their wishes, right? Because if you can't say for sure if they would have similar wishes if they were not mentally impaired. Okay, so that's a very, again, very classic, very common MBME scenario you want to keep at the back of your mind. Now, what if you get a question about, you know, like a four-week-old kid, he's brought to the ED, he's been having like bilious vomiting for the past like 2-3 days, and let's say he has like, you know, his potassium is 2.5, so he's hypokalemic, his bicarb is like 14, right, so he has like a metabolic acidosis, and his chloride is like 80. Remember, if you're vomiting, right, you have a hypokalemic, hypochloremic metabolic acidosis, right? That's, again, a classic MBME question. And they tell you that, oh, you'll get like some, like an upper GI series or whatever, and you'll see the imaging, the radiologist report, or something in the question. They tell you that, oh, that you see like the bowel twisted on itself, or you see like evidence of volvulus, or evidence of like really bad malrotation. Usually it's like malrotation with volvulus. And then they say that the parents are saying that we don't trust the medical system. We do not want you to poison our child. We don't want you to give any surgical intervention, because usually in the QSTEM they'll say, oh, that you recommend immediate surgical intervention because this kid is going to die without this intervention or whatever. And the parents are staunchly refusing that intervention. And then they say, what is the next best step in management? Your next step under those circumstances is to, guess what? Take the kid to surgery against the parents' wishes. Okay? So here's the high yield principle. So you may say again, Divine, this sounds really disconcerting, but again, here's the high yield principle. Whenever you see a situation where something is life threatening, right, to like a kid, right, especially usually they pose these questions as pediatric style questions on MBME exams, pediatrics ethics questions basically on MBMEs. If you see a question about a kid, this kid is going to die without this thing being done, life-threatening situation, it does not matter what the parents think, okay? Go ahead and proceed with doing what is the best medical thing that is indicated for that kid. I mean, one nice way they love to test this on MBMEs is to test with like certain like religious groups having objections to things like to certain like medical practices. If it's a kid, okay, notice I'm not saying adult. If it's a kid, do what is medically indicated, regardless of religious belief or whatever is going on with that child. But again, you need to make sure, and again, the MBME is not an ambiguous exam, even if many people will lead you to believe that. That is actually not true. But they will make it very clear, it's something life-threatening, this kid is going to die if he doesn't get treatment. And then the MBME question will try to talk about like, oh, parents refusing and all that crap. Forget whatever the parents say. It absolutely does not matter. Okay? Do what is the best thing that is medically indicated for that child. And one thing I would like to say about that is also like they may give you this classic scenario where, again, it, and this applies to like a parent, adult, kid, it doesn't matter. But he brings someone to the ED, there's no family around, you can't get across to any family, it's an emergency situation, and then they ask for the next step in management. Again, as the physician, you call the shots there. Make the decision of what is best, like the best thing that's medically indicated for that patient. If it's proceeding to surgery or giving this intervention or whatever, even if you cannot get consent from parents, it doesn't matter. Just do that thing and move on. Okay, that would be the right thing to do on an MBME, on an MBME exam. So remember I kept saying earlier, kids, right? So if a condition is life-threatening and an adult is completely with it, right? He has no evidence of delirium. He doesn't have brain cancer that is clouding his judgment. He's not under the influence of any substance or whatever. And he says, I do not want any intervention. And you tell him, like, even in the question, like, the MBME will try to mess with your head by saying, sir, like, if you don't get this intervention, you're going to die or something, right? The patient's autonomy comes first. If it's an adult, if it's a kid, the rule is different. But if it's an adult, it absolutely does not matter. The adult's decision, as long as, again, they're mentally with it, comes first. You need to respect the patient's autonomy under those circumstances. Again, I know you may say, Divine, you're being very specific. Again, I promise you all these things are high-yield things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. Okay, so now, what if you get a question about, a guy, you know, he's in the hospital, he has, let's say he has a history of, like, Alzheimer's, dementia, and also basically, like, some condition that makes him not mentally able to like make decisions, and he has like no, how do I put it? He has no like written directives or whatever, right? And then he comes in to the hospital, and over the past 3 weeks, he's had like jaundice, he's had like some mild fevers, he's lost like 15 pounds. And then they tell you that they obtain imaging, and you notice that he has like a pancreatic cancer that's like encasing the superior mesenteric artery. He has like numerous like hepatic and lung metastases. And they even say, maybe they see in the question that, oh, a research study that was done, I don't know, like X number of years ago, states that in patients that have like the patient, like the basically the kind of problem the person has in the question, there are chance of there is no improved survival with a certain like kind of medical therapy or whatever and all that stuff, right? And then they again bring a family member into the question and say, this family member says everything should be done, this and that, blah 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 blah, do surgery, give heavy chemotherapy, redeal this person out the wazoo. And then they ask, what is the next best step in management? The next best step in management under those circumstances is, wrong English. Your next best step in management are comfort care measures, okay? Do not do something that is medically contraindicated, even if a family is forcing you to do it. And again, the MBME will not be ambiguous here. They will give you hints in the question that tells you that this thing that the family wants you to do is against standard of care, okay? Do not be forced into doing something that is not medically indicated on an MBME exam. Even if you have the weight of the family on your shoulders, it absolutely does not matter. If it's not medically indicated, then don't do it, okay? Very important to keep that in mind. Okay, now, what if you get a question about, like a 14-year-old kid, and this kid has, some medical condition that requires surgery, okay? Let me just say medical condition requiring surgery, right? And this kid says, this kid is completely with it, and let's say it's a 14-year-old kid. So this kid, completely with it, doesn't have any mental status anomalies, is not under the influence of any medications, nothing. And he says, I do not want the surgery. But the parents say, we want the surgery, right? What would your next best step in management be on an MBME exam? I would hope that you are picking the answer that involves proceeding with the surgery. So here's the deal. So here's the rule. Here's the pattern. Here's the principle. If a person is less than 18 years old on an MBME exam, that person's wishes, especially in the presence of their parents, do not count. Okay, if you are less than 18 on an MBME exam, well, all the best. Whatever your parents want is what goes, with a few exceptions. I'll talk about those exceptions. But again, key principle you want to keep in mind here is, as long as you're less than 18, your parents' decisions carry the most weight, okay? So, what are those exceptions, right? So if the exceptions relate to something involving like mental health, right? Like mental health issues, then that, under those circumstances, the kid, even if he's less than 18 years old, what they want is what counts, okay? If it's also a reproductive health issue, right, then whatever the kid wants is what counts. So let's say it's like a 16-year-old female and she's pregnant, right? Whatever she says about her pregnancy is what holds, okay? And other like rarer scenarios that essentially almost never show up on MBMEs is if, for example, it's a kid that is married, right, before the age of 18. Once you're married, then your parents' decisions really don't count much in your life anymore. And then another kind of like weird one is if you've been emancipated, right? But I mean, really ask yourself, are you really going to see that on an MBME? Could you show up EIA code? That's why I'm covering it. But those things are like, those are not the, because those are things you find in every book, right? Oh, if a kid is emancipated, blah, 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 right? Everyone has memorized that stuff. So chances are your friends at the MBME will probably not throw that on an exam. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a, patient comes in for an office visit, he has like diffuse lymphadenopathy, diarrhea for a couple of weeks, he's sexually active, uses condoms inconsistently with multiple partners, and then you do some testing and you notice this person has AIDS, right? And he says that you should please not tell his partner. And then your friends at the MBME say, what is the next best step in management? Well, here's the deal. dude with AIDS, I'm sorry, that really sucks, but you do need to inform, like the partner needs to get informed in some way, shape or form, right? In fact, you are not, you are basically not counting on the partner to inform, like, let's say the partner informs you, tells you, oh, I will inform my partner, I will inform the other people I'm sleeping with, whatever. No, that is not the right next step in management, okay? You can encourage the partner to you can encourage the affected party to tell his other partners. But on an MDME, you want to go ahead and pick the answer that involves informing the health department, okay? Informing the health department. You inform the health department, and then the health department will inform the other people that this person is potentially having a sexual relations with, okay? In fact, they may try to give you an answer that involves you promising the patient that you will not inform any authorities or inform the partner. Do not pick that answer, okay? That's a trap answer, okay? Basically, on an MBME, you need to make sure that no harm happens to the patient. We also need to make sure that no harm happens to other people that may be related to the patient, okay? So that's something high yield you want to keep at the back of your mind. You cannot make that promise because by law, you cannot keep it. You need to inform other people, right? So other cases will be like things like TB or like some sexually transmitted infection, right? So again, you want to keep that rule at the back of your mind. It's almost kind of like the Tarasov decision, right? Where let's say a patient comes in, tells you, oh, I'm going to kill my girlfriend or whatever. Or I'm going to kill my wife. Or I'm going to kill my husband and all that stuff, right? Under those circumstances, doctor-patient confidentiality doesn't mean squat, okay? Doesn't mean squat under those circumstances. Under those circumstances, you do have a duty to warn. Okay, if you don't warn, there will be some very nice attorney or lawyer that will be happy to come and sue you for like millions and millions of dollars, right? So under those circumstances, you have a duty to warn, okay? But let me go ahead and say this, right? So let's assume this is probably something that will be more likely on step three. What if in the question they ask for the next step in management and they give you some sample? Let's say they say, oh, they say, oh, you decide to call the wife to inform her or whatever, or the partner or spouse or whatever, right? And then they say, what is the next step in management, right? Because usually when people read those questions, they're like, oh, I know I'm going to pick the answer that involves duty to warn. But here's how step three will try to get you, right? They will tell you that, oh, you decide to call the partner, right? So they already give you the next step in management. In fact, whenever I see whenever I see questions on MBMEs where, like the answer you're expecting, they've already thrown it in the question. That's usually like almost like an ominous sign on an MBME that, oh man, these answers are going to be really hard, right? But that's besides the point. We can talk about that at some other time. But basically, let's assume they give you a couple of statements, right? And then let's assume they give you a sentence that involves sort of like telling the wife like that she's like in, that she should go so and so place. She's in imminent danger. And all that stuff, blah, 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 right? They give you one statement that agrees with that. And then let's assume they give you another statement where you talk about the specifics of what the husband wants to do, like, or the partner. Like, the partner wants to come in, he has a machete, he's going to come, chop off your head, do this, do that, do this, do that. And then they ask you to pick an answer. Which one do you think will be more correct? It will actually be the one where you just give enough information that would ensure the patient gets safe, but do not go into like all these specifics that may then ultimately cause harm to your own patient. So the patient that just said, oh, I'm going to go home and kill my partner or whatever. What if you tell the wife all those gory details and then the wife says, oh, you know what? I'll stay on the roof of my apartment. I mean, of our house or apartment or whatever, and hold like a 9mm. And as he's walking through the door without warning or anything, I just shoot him down, right? Guess what happened? You just caused harm for your own patient, okay? So under those circumstances, you have to be extremely, extremely careful, right? Give enough information that would ensure ensure safety of the other person, that like the other party that is in impending danger, but also ensures the safety of your own patient. Because if that patient gets shot or whatever, trust me, that's a lawsuit on your head. Again, a lawyer can rightfully sue you and get money out of you. So under those circumstances, just sort of keep that at the back of your mind. That is one of those brain twisters that your friends at the MBME love to occasionally throw on exams. And then the last thing I think I'm going to go ahead and say here is, if a person is, because again, I want to keep this podcast to like 30 minutes or less. But basically, if the MBME gives, and again, this is something that shows up more often on step three, right? If the MBME gives you a question about a person that's depressed, right? And then you see like statements in the question that get you worried, right? Like, I don't think I can take this anymore. I think I may want to do this and that. I may want to end my life. Can I continue? Like, I can't continue like this for much longer and all that stuff. If you see any whiff of suicide in an MBME ethics question, or usually this can also be like a psych question, you need to pick the answer that involves either screen, like that involves some kind of action against suicide. It can either be an answer that involves screening for suicide or getting the patient to come into the hospital or something of that nature, okay? But you do need to pick the answer, because that's an they may try to trick you on the exam by giving you an answer choice that says to give antidepressants and all that stuff. But that's antidepressants takes 4 to 6 weeks to work, right? To take 4 to 6 weeks to work. The person may be dead by then. They may have committed suicide and be long dead. Right, so don't pick that answer choice. The answer choice you want to pick on an MBME involves like screening for suicide, right? But let me give you like two permutations to that. What if they give you a question and they say like, oh, like basically like you suspect suicide in the Q-stem, and then they give you an answer choice that says to ask the patient about how they feel about coming into the hospital. Almost like, again, like almost like voluntarily trying to get them to come into the hospital, versus an answer choice that like is more forceful and says, get the patient into the hospital, involuntarily commit them and all that stuff. Which one should you choose? Well, that's a great question. The great question there is, the one you choose depends on what the question is telling you. So if you have not assessed for suicide, or if you've not asked the patient about how like their feelings with regards to coming into the hospital on a voluntary basis, go ahead and pick that answer that involves voluntarily getting them into the hospital. Because think about it, between the milder approach and the more forceful approach, the one that encourages the patient-physician relationship is the milder approach. So that's the one you should go with. The only time that you should really go with the more forceful, like involuntary admission to the hospital, blah, 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 on an exam, is if you have told the patient that you are concerned about their safety. And again, they may not use my exact words, but again, you're a med student, right? You can figure this out. They will be kind of clear saying that, oh, okay, you've asked this patient to come into the hospital, they refuse, they say, oh, they're not going to commit suicide or whatever. Then under those circumstances, you can involuntarily get them into the hospital. Okay, so that's the first permutation. The second permutation is, if the MBME in the Q-stem tells you, right, that this patient does, like, let's say, for example, they may say mental status exam is negative for any evidence of suicidal ideation or suicidality. If the MBME tells you themselves that, oh, this patient has been assessed and there is no risk of them committing suicide, then you do not need to bring them into the hospital. That is the MBME telling you, do not bring this patient into the hospital, okay? But that's a very weird, super specific scenario that shows up very rarely on exams. But it's so, one of those things that actually does show up. It may be rare, but it does show up. So keep that at the very back of your mind. So I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. I'll pick up from this standpoint next time. I know, again, a lot of people, ethics. I think that's probably one of the bigger gaping holes on my website. So I'll try to make a series out of this. And as I do before I end every session, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams. Step 1, 2CK, 2CS, Step 3. I've worked with thousands of people, and the overwhelming majority of them have been really successful working with me. I do one-on-one tutoring primarily. And then I do offer one-on-one tutoring for like the preclinical exams, the third year shelf exams, the American Board of Internal Medicine, like the medicine boards, basically, and also the internal medicine in training exam. I do offer tutoring for all those things. And then if you're a med student applying to residency, so like an ERAS application, or a college student applying to med school, so an AMCAS application, I do offer like one-on-one consulting and advising for that. So like writing personal statements, preparing applications, mock interviews, all that stuff. I do offer one-on-one help with all those things. So just reach out to me either through the website or through Divine Intervention Podcasts with an S at the end at gmail.com. And then if you have a college buddy that needs tutoring in like physics, general chemistry, organic chemistry, biochemistry, physiology, histology, I do offer tutoring for all those things. So, well, I do hope you've gotten a lot from this podcast. I wish you all the very best. Have a great rest of your night. I'm also going to bed myself, and God bless you. I'll see you next time.